I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks very much for joining me. This is Like It Is. The Like It Is College series continues today with Amritha Gopal. She is an incoming junior with a major in political science at West Valley College in Sarasota, California. Here's our conversation.
I have a very interesting conversation today with Amritha Gopal. And yes, we're going to be talking about a number of things here. But I would like to give the floor to Amritha and tell us a bit about yourself and how did you get to West Valley College?
Yeah, so thank you so much for that introduction, Dr. Franklin. As Dr. Franklin mentioned, my name is Amritha. I first actually came to West Valley after high school. I actually struggled a lot in high school as I was dealing with chronic pain as well as an undiagnosed learning disability. And because of that, I didn't really get the scaffolding and accommodations that I needed to succeed in high school. And I thought it would be beneficial to spend some more time at home and really kind of hone in on what I wanted to study and just to sort of develop some skills, get more support and things like that. So that's kind of what led me to West Valley. I actually had the opportunity to talk to some administrators before I enrolled, and I really learned about all the support they have for students like myself experiencing disabilities and all the accommodations I could have access to. And at West Valley, because I got the support I needed, I really thrived there. I was a part of student government while I was at West Valley. I was in the Honor Society. I just did a lot of different things here and there. And I really loved everything I did. I was also in the student newspaper. And of course, with all the things that I did, I really tried to keep the lens of equity in mind, especially working with students like myself. And so it's a pleasure to be here and talking about democracy and equity, things that I'm really passionate about.
All right, we're going to get into that in just a second or two. You serve as a, exactly what is a student trustee and what are some of your responsibilities and what are some of your objectives in terms of getting other students involved or advocating for other students and their rights?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Being a student trustee essentially means that I report to the West Valley Mission Board of Trustees. That's the governing board that oversees both of our colleges. I'm the West Valley student trustee, so my job is to represent that constituency. So about like West Valley, like all of our students, which is like anywhere, I believe from 7,000 to like 10,000 or so. It's like the number kind of changes. But my job is to represent their goals and interests to our board of trustees who make really important decisions on things regarding how housing, scholarships. We recently passed both a free tuition and a free meal resolution, essentially. So now West Valley is able to offer both of those things. So my goal is to represent, again, as I said, the student interests. And so to really advocate for students in that capacity. So obviously, a lot of the measures that we had on the floor with Board of Trustees were very student-centered and equity-focused. Something that I was also really proud of that our board did was passing a student trustee pay parity resolution, which means that our student trustees get paid the same as our regular trustees. So thinking not only about like students at West Valley and Mission, but also the student trustees serving on our board. Another thing that I'm really proud of that I did in my capacity as student trustee is lobbying at the Capitol. I lobbied for the protection of our basic needs centers, which are so critical to our students at West Valley and Mission College. But basically our basic needs centers provide things like gas cards, meal vouchers. They help students that are housing insecure. And because of the way funding is being allocated and the specific bills that are that allocate money to basic needs centers, that funding was in jeopardy. And so that was something that I talked about and that I was really passionate about. But obviously, I always try to keep students in mind in what I'm doing because it's easy for me to kind of get caught up in my own lens. But my job is to represent thousands of students, not just myself.
And you also work to increase civic engagement. What is, in your opinion, your definition of civic engagement?
Yeah, that's also a really wonderful question. For me, civic engagement kind of goes beyond just, I think like the obvious answer is voting and being involved with your community, but there's so many ways to be civically engaged. Obviously, again, the big one is voting. And so what our student government would do is we would table in the campus center and we would help students get registered to vote. We also made things or posted videos and posts on our social media telling students how to get access to voter registration information. information. But another really great way to be civically engaged is to volunteer with your community and to kind of see the effects of that. Something that I did when I was part of the Honor Society is I would volunteer at Second Harvest Food Bank, and they're a really wonderful organization that provide food and fresh produce to food insecure families all across the Bay Area and the peninsula. So I actually would work with our Democracy Institute and all of our students, and we would pack these boxes together. And I think at one point we packed like 25,000 pounds of food, like us and the other group that was there. And just kind of seeing that impact that like we can have as just like a small group of students, I think is really wonderful. And so beyond voting, which is also really important to be educated and to vote on those measures, civic engagement also means being actively engaged with your community and volunteering.
Throughout the media and really in communities across the country, DEI, I should say, diversity, equity, and inclusion, has taken on a negative connotation. And I'm just curious to know your definition of equity.
I think that is very true. Like I remember being in so many rooms and spaces where we were having conversations about what is the current federal administration's agenda look like because of this attack basically on DEI and DEIA. And to me, equity is not just it. Equity is not just theory, but it's practice. So the way that I always learned about equity and the way that it was defined for me was in a relation to the word equality. When we talk about equality, we're talking about kind of giving everyone the same rights or the same resources. And that's really important. But equity is also that's taking it a step further and giving everyone the resources they need. Coming back to myself as an example, because I'm a student with a disability, I receive certain accommodations. And like sometimes I would be met with people would talk to me and be like, oh, you get accommodations. That means you have an unfair advantage. But that is not at all the case. I'm actually just receiving the accommodations that I need to perform at the same level as a peer who doesn't have the same disability as me. But when I say that equity isn't just theory, it's practice, I mean that we talk a lot about equity and what it means, but it also is really important to put that into practice. So, for example, if we're talking about appreciating different cultures and uplifting marginalized ethnic groups. It's one thing to, I think, appreciate a culture and let's say like have like a mariachi band to celebrate our Hispanic and Mexican students. But I think what really makes equity truly like in its full definition and truly practiced is when we also uplift those students and we give them resources. Like for example, our school had Know Your Rights workshops where we were talking about how to protect our undocumented students and other things like that. And so it's like actually giving these groups the resources that they need to succeed rather than just talking about doing those things or just kind of doing things performatively, if that makes sense.
It does. In this moment, historical moment, do you feel confident that equity will win out versus the negative connotations associated with it?
That is obviously a very difficult question, but I truly believe because of the people that I've been in community with, I've met so many incredible student leaders and people that I believe are forces of change and good in this world. And I think when we look at, again, the federal administration and their agenda and how dehumanizing it can be. I was recently reading in the news about the alligator Alcatraz in the Everglades, and I was really moved by that. It's just kind of difficult to see a country that's always been uplifted as this bastion of freedom and independence and progress to be engaging in such dehumanizing activities. But I really do feel that we have so many leaders that exemplify what America is. Something that actually gave me a lot of hope recently was the election of Zohran Mamdani to in the New York City mayoral election, which was such a major upset. And I think that that really shows where voters and their priorities are at. Obviously, New York is a small subset of America, but I think that given that what a big upset that was, and the fact that Zohran Mamdani, he had this grassroots campaign that was very much equity focused, I think it really shows America's potential and our priorities and our ability to center equity and to really focus on it and hone in on it in our kind of our future elections and activities. It can definitely feel hopeless at times, but I believe in the strength and the resolve and the importance of equity to the American people.
Now, you say you are passionate about democracy. Talk a bit about where that passion comes from and where and why democracy is so important to you in your life and your student lives there at West Valley and other places?
Yeah, absolutely. My passion for democracy actually began with my grandfather. He's an immigrant to this country, and he brought my father and like a lot of our family over here when my father was very young. But it was difficult for my grandfather when he first came to this country. He had a degree in engineering, but when you come to the United States, there's different requirements, and so his degree essentially meant nothing. He was working to make ends meet. He worked as a lucky cashier and in the meat packing factories and things like that. And he really kind of worked his way up, and he was also an educator. He used his degree to actually go into schools and teach students about STEM and educate them. And he'd always tell me he'd have students that would say his last name is Gopi, and they'd say, like, Mr. Gopi, we'll never forget you. And so his fervor and his passion for this country, despite the fact that he wasn't treated as well when he came here, he has so much hope in America. From every election he was able to vote in, he's voted in. And he was so excited for me the first time I was able to vote. And he always speaks with such passion about the issues that are currently happening. And just knowing that he came here and sacrificed so much to give me a better life, as did my mom, as did my dad. That's why democracy means so much to me, because I feel like this whole idea of the American dream obviously is flawed, but central to it and the idea that immigrants come here is because America is a democratic nation. And it's what's allowed me to prosper in ways that my family wasn't able to when they were in India. And I think that democracy has been so core to a lot of my work, to being a student trustee, to being part of student government and civic engagement and everything. It's what allows us to make our voices heard and to create change. There's so much injustice in our world. And I mean, it's like, you know, people talk about it. It's like, if you're not angry, just like look around, like pick something to be angry about, because there's injustice everywhere. But democracy is what allows us to be a part of that change and to not only just look at the injustice and see it, but to actually write it, you know, to be the change that we want to see in the world, as Mahatma Gandhi said. So that's why democracy is so important to me.
You said you voted for the first time. Mm-hmm. Take us back to how it made you feel to have your voice heard and to vote for the very first time.
Yes, absolutely. When I turned 18, obviously we had midterm elections, but I think the more like significant elections was the on year that we had. So the presidential elections, as well as a lot of the state measures. That was really an incredible feeling. It was obviously, there were so many different emotions kind of flying through the air at that time for me. As obviously we had this very tight presidential race. We had a lot of measures on the state ballot that were very important to me, specifically the one about the California Constitution and outlawing slavery, and the specific proposition about rent control as well, as I've had many friends that have suffered from housing insecurity, and I've seen the detrimental effects of that. And so it was really amazing to be able to not only vote, but also to talk to my friends, to give my perspective and to get their perspective. Obviously, there were certain issues, like maybe on the state ballot, that we may have disagreed on, but I was just happy to see so many of my peers voting, to be a part of that change, and to also have given my perspective and to get other people's perspective as well, and to think, oh, how do I feel about this measure? I've done all this reading, but I'm not sure if this is a biased source. Can I talk to this person? I'm so lucky to be surrounded by so many, and at the time I was voting, to have been surrounded by so many bright and intellectual peers. And so dropping my ballot in the ballot box at our school, I felt very confident in the way that I was voting. And of course, the presidential election was a bit scary thinking about. I voted for Kamala. And it was scary to kind of think about how close the race was, but I felt confident and like my conscience was clear knowing that I had voted.
Your political science, you're in the political science area. Mm-hmm. And what would you like to accomplish in your career as a political science graduate?
My greatest goal as a political science major is to really create change in the world. And as much as that might sound like a cliche, it is one of my greatest goals. One thing that I really want to pursue after I complete my undergraduate studies is to go to law school. I really want to major in something that would allow me to create civic impact, such as human rights law or even like criminal justice. I actually have an aunt who works in, she actually lives in Chicago, and she's a lawyer, And she helps advocate for juveniles and like adolescents, specifically youth there, and helps them d defend them, obviously, from going into the prison system. Obviously, it's very clear that America has a very clear school to prison pipeline, and Black and Brown people, and especially youth, are overrepresented in that system. And her work is to make sure that that's no longer the case, and to prevent these younger adolescents from immediately being pushed into the prison system. So I'd love to be doing something in that arena. There's so many different, obviously, causes and groups that I'm passionate about. Another one that another like group that I'm really passionate about is people that are disabled, such as myself. Having struggled with both visible and invisible disability, I actually I feel like I better understand kind of how people are affected by disability discrimination and kind of that area. And I feel that being disabled, there's so many intersections between race and class as well. A lot of overlapping identities that impact the way that disabled people are treated. And so I would really want to use the legal system to help defend for and demand justice for people and victims of discrimination through disability or any other intersecting factors of race and class.
So when you are talking with your colleagues on campus and you are talking and sharing your passion, how are they interpreting and receiving your passion? Are they tuned into you, or how are they reacting to you?
That's a great question. I definitely have some classmates who I know have become a little bit disillusioned and jaded. And I understand, I know it can feel like a bit of a hopeless sphere sometimes, but my politics, I believe, is I've always believed is rooted in optimism and the belief that we can and always should be better. And so I've definitely been met with people that are very much jaded, even some people that are surprised to see a young South Asian woman like me being very outspoken, as the stereotype in our culture is that, Asian women are supposed to be a little bit more docile and softer spoken. But I continue to be loud and outspoken, and I'm very grateful that the majority of my peers share my passion and are very zealous and fervorous in their fight for justice. I actually remember we had an Earth Day celebration on campus, but on the same day we had anti-abortion activists come to campus, showing fear-mongering and showing very disturbing images. And I remember feeling so drained and exhausted, and it was a hard day for me, and it was hard to see those images. But what really made me so happy and kind of gave me life again to speak out against these protesters was seeing my peers coming out and counter-protesting with signs talking about reproductive justice and really kind of fighting against these protesters. And again, I support free speech, and I obviously those protesters, the anti-abortion protesters, had a right to be there on our campus, but we obviously also have the right to counter protest and make our voices heard, which is also a central tenet of democracy.
You're at West Valley College. You're taking classes there. What are some of the provocative or interesting classes that help to prepare you, shape you, and give you the encouragement and the passion that you currently have exhibited in this interview thus far?
I've been lucky to have so many wonderful professors at West Valley. I think specifically some of the classes that have really helped prepare me have been the political science classes that I've taken with one of my favorite professors, Dr. Kelly. One particularly provocative and interesting class was comparative governments. In this class, we looked at a lot of different governmental structures, ranging from the United States to Iran to India, and Germany, and it was really interesting to see how all of these different places kind of operate with such different governmental structures. And obviously, there's no one system that's perfect in terms of government, but I often found when I was looking at these governmental systems that the ones that prioritize, for example, in pr the prison and justice system, the ones that prioritize rehabilitation are often the ones that are more successful and have happier citizens and just a greater overall sense of well-being within their population. And obviously, it was really wonderful to kind of use this lens of equity and my passion for democracy to sort of analyze each of these different countries and to think about how we can sort of adopt these styles and these practices of these countries in America to be better ourselves. Another class that was really incredible for me to take was cultural anthropology. It made me realize how many of our cultural conventions are shaped by Western cultural norms and our Western lens. For example, something that I thought was really interesting is we talked about language in cultural anthropology and AAVE, or African American Vernacular English, and how a lot of times when young African American men or women or people in general speak that way, they're told that they're speaking incorrectly. But what we learn in cultural anthropology is that that's a fictional lens and way of looking at speech. And it's actually just a way to police and keep certain people in power and certain speech patterns as the norm. But obviously, there's nothing incorrect or inherently wrong with AAVE. It's just sort of a, again, a cultural construction. The last class that really did, I feel like, prepare me and gave me the run lens of racial justice was actually English composition. And the theme of it was othering and other and stepping on other people. What does it mean to be othered? What does it mean to be the other? What does it mean to be doing the othering? We talked about really incredible people, thinkers and leaders like James Baldwin. We talked about eugenics, which I had never talked about in a class until that class. And it just, again, really gave me that lens of racial justice and equity. And it also opened my eyes to a lot of the injustices that are just sort of stepped on or brushed under the carpet in our normal American curriculum.
When I got out, traveled to China, traveled to Africa, I was able to see and experience and be immersed in different cultures. Talk about the importance, in your view, of cultural understanding, cultural immersion, and cultural diversity and respect, and having students get outside their comfort zone to really get into those particular communities that they may not be familiar with, but have just seen stereotypical images on television about.
Yes, I 100% believe and I'm a full advocate of students getting out of their comfort zone, going to different countries, and kind of adopting a different lens than the one that they may have been sort of innately programmed with or seen in Western media. Having I myself, my cultural background is my parents are from India, and that's where my heritage stems from. Unfortunately, a lot of the times Western media projects India as this sort of backward place that's deeply entrenched in poverty. And of course, that there is something to be said about the there is poverty within India, as there is in every country in the world. But when we selectively show those images, we lose out on the rich cultural history and tapestry that is India. And it's a disservice to our students for them to not be able to be able to understand and fully recognize the cultural complexities and nuances of these places. I know for me myself, I was really fortunate to receive a scholarship to study abroad from West Valley. So me, along with 17 other students, we went to Salzburg, Austria, and we attended the Global Citizenship Seminar. And we were able to, it was a really incredible seminar. We talked a lot about climate change and different issues that are impacting our world globally. But I think beyond, obviously, just talking about it, I think practice again is very important. I actually remember my same cultural anthropology teacher talking about how we took a group of students to Cambodia, and they were there to build houses and to help the like local villagers. But once the students were actually building the houses, the villagers actually were waiting for them to leave, and then they actually took everything that the students had done down. And I think it's oftentimes we go into these places, especially countries that we consider developing, with this sort of savior mentality, like, oh, we're here to save these people. But I think it's a much more, I think it's a less, much less exploitative sort of way to, a much less exploitative way to do so is to actually go in with the idea and the intention to learn from this group rather than to save them or help them or to take anything from them.
Who are some of the people in your life that have had a positive influence on your life presently, and why?
I think I've already mentioned my grandfather and my aunt. They're both people that inspire me so much. My grandfather, because he's an immigrant to this country, yet he loves it so much and he has so much hope. He would always talk to me about politics, and he's actually a large part of the reason why I chose to major in political science. My aunt, as I mentioned, is someone who also inspires me. As we are immigrants of this country, it's often more traditional to major in something that's considered lucrative, such as engineering or computer science. So me majoring in political science is a bit non-traditional, but I'm very lucky to have such a supportive family. Obviously my mother and my father, but my aunt was really someone I looked to as a trailblazer, and someone who really created, followed her passion, and is part of the part of instilling and really protecting democracy where she is. In addition to obviously my family and the support system around me, I'm also really inspired by a lot of the student leaders that I've met. Someone in particular that really inspires me is someone I work with in student government and one of my closest friends. Her name is Amy Nguyen, and she's also a fellow woman of color like myself, and she was the vice president of our student senate. That means that she would chair the meetings, and she was a really fierce student advocate. She came with me when we advocated at the Capitol, and she was so she was very confident and firm in these sessions, yet she was so passionate, and had this ability to really tell her story. And she was also responsible at West Valley for spearheading a really important and critical project with the town of the neighboring town of Los Gatos, where they would provide us emergency housing vouchers for students facing housing insecurity. And I thought that was such a great initiative. So seeing strong women of color such as her in that field is really incredible and inspiring.
I'm just about to ask you the importance of seeing individuals who look like yourself. How important is that?
That's absolutely incredibly important in this field. As I mentioned, there's sort of a stereotype with Asian and South Asian women, so like East Asian and South Asian women specifically, where we have there's this sort of expectation of meekness and docility that's imposed upon us, where we're supposed to just sort of be quiet and take it lying down. And so I know especially sometimes, although I do have a supportive family, I would sometimes face that traditional expectation myself, where people would be a little bit shocked at how outspoken I was. And so it was, I think that like seeing other women, again, going back to the example of my aunt, being so outspoken and unafraid in their quest for justice made me feel better about it. Seeing like, oh, she looks like me and she's advocating so fiercely for these issues, that means I can do it too. And just to share a little bit of my personal experience, I remember talking to someone who worked in the West Valley administration. Her name was Shruti Nading, and she was talking to me and she was like, I saw your speech that you gave like at this event, and I just wanted to thank you for representing our South Asian community. It's really inspiring to see leaders like you. And it honestly made me feel a little emotional, you know, thinking I could be the representation and the change I wanted to see in the world. So I really think that like that's also an example of equity in practice, is having student leaders and leaders in general of all different classes, races, ethnicities, and backgrounds.
We're right up about the end of our program, but I'd like to give you an opportunity to share some take-home thought, if you like, regarding our conversation today. It's been very spirited. My guest is Amritha Goble, and I am so privileged to have had a chance to speak with you today. Much success to you, and keep on keeping on.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Dr. Franklin. I really appreciate the work that you're doing, and it was wonderful speaking with you as well.
Okay, you take real good care.
My guest today on the Like It Is College series was Amritha Gopal, a junior political science major at West Valley College in Sarasota, California. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.